Time now for a penalty spot. Let's say good evening to Paul Mears.
Well, good evening to you, Larry. Good evening to all of our listeners, and welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot, the island's leading football show. And coming up on today's program, we have BFA President Randy Harris will be joining us. He can answer all your questions about local football. Former national player Eric Levine, now living in Germany, will be our star player this evening. And in the club corner, we feature Beverly Hills. We also have the very latest on the English Premier League and, of course, the rest of the European football. Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. I'm Paul Mears, and, of course, alongside me this evening, as usual, will be Curtis Sines. And welcome back to the program. We're going to go this evening right away to our very special feature this evening, the star player of the evening, as I said, Eric Levine. And we're going to go right to Eric Levine. As I said, he's now residing in Germany. Good evening to you, Eric, and welcome to Penalty Spot.
Good evening, Paul.
Great to have you with us this evening. And my first question to you, Eric, this evening, how did a Barbadian footballer end up living in Germany? Tell us about that move.
Well, it all began when I was playing professional football in Ireland, and I met my wife, and she's German. So after I finished playing professional football, I moved over here to Germany. That's about 8 years ago now. We're married 8 years now. So, yeah, I moved over here, and I find it very, you know, cool after leaving Ireland. But yeah, all in all, I was happy to move here. Fantastic country.
Okay, great. I'm going to bring you back home now for a short while. I'm going to take you back many years ago. How did this all start for you? You know, your involvement in football.
Well, you know, like anybody that knows the Levine family is a sports family.
Yes, Jonathan, Richard.
Grew up playing. Yeah, everybody. And most of, I used to play a lot of cricket before as well.
Okay.
At the highest level in Barbados as well. But, and I decided after that, I'm going to try a bit something after I left school. Then I was playing for a team in Spikestown named Technico. And that was my first stepping stone because I couldn't even play football that good. I can only kick the ball hard and run fast. That was about it. But then then I met Peter Cadden, and he taught me all the ins and outs of football, how to control the ball, how to dribble people, how to, you know, score goals. And, yeah, after that, I think I just improved. And then 3 years after that, I found myself in the national team, which was a big surprise to me because,
before we get to the national team from Technico in St. Peter, where did that take you then in terms of club football?
It took me, everywhere. I can say that was, like I said, it was a learning experience for me there. I learned a lot from the players that were there before me that could have played football better than I could at that time. And I learned so much from them, and they helped me along the way. And then eventually I was up to the standard that they were at, and then I went past them because I wanted more out of the football. After I became better and better, I started training on my own a lot. And then, yeah, like I said, it just happened.
from Technico, which club did you move on to? Did you have a stint with Gold Hill at some point?
I went down to Gold Hill for like after that straight away. I think the football season has broken up, and then Technico had split up as well, and then we so I decided to. So I did play in the best tournament. I think Randy should know about the best tournament as well.
Right.
One of the best tournaments in the island at that time. And I played for Gore Hill as a guest player. And I liked what I saw in Gore Hill. And the next year, I moved to Gore Hill. And I played for Gore Hill for a few years after that.
you seem to quickly, as you were hinting at, move into the national team. Tell me about that move now.
Well, Dad, like I said, that was a surprise to me too. I was playing on the 23. I think Tabaka was his coach at that time, and Peter Cattle and that, and he was in, Antigua Barbuda. That was my debut, and I did very well there. I played very well there in that first. And then after that, it was just like, you know, normal. I played with Lalo and all these players that was playing before.
And when I was about to ask you who would have been some of the, you know, the players that would have been in the squad when you came into the national team, who would you have played with?
Like I played with, you mean from under 8, from under 23 up? Or
yeah, what? Under 23 and coming out, that's right.
Yeah, well, I had to play with Lalo, I played with Horace Stout, played with Llewellyn Riley, played with Michael Haywood. But yeah, Roger Huggins and all the players that was basically in the BDS sports program at that time. We played together and it was great. And then I move on to that team. I think the most of that team move on to the senior team.
Senior national, that's right.
I played with Trevor Thorne, one of my best mates still. He talks to me. We talk regularly on the phone. I played with Potato. I played with Ibo. I played with Ben Nyes. I played along with Daisy, Adrian, Morris Gaskin. I keep going and going and going.
Eric, was a golden era for local footballs. Really excellent players.
I learned a lot from these players, you know. I learned a lot from these players when it was coming up. Because I was one of the younger players coming into a team with so much experience in it that you can only learn, like, from Irisidi, LeVere Blackman, Yaya Callender, and Warren Stevie. Keep going through the names, you know. They're all popping up because I was with in a team, number 4, all these players that were there. And, you know, it was just a group of players that was fantastic, you know, players that can play football.
Before we go to look at your stint in Ireland, what was it like playing in those World Cup qualifying matches?
Yeah. World Cup qualifiers. Well, like I said, I played 2 or 3, I think, for Barbados, or 4 or more than that. But playing the qualifiers was, at that time, was great. I thought that we could have done more as a team because we had a really good team with overseas based players to homegrown players. We had a good basic team, a complete team, but we didn't live up to what our expectations at that time, and I think that really let us down after we had beaten Costa Rica by us, and then we went to America and we lost. I got sent off in that game, I think, and Gus heard that somebody gets sent off as well, other than that. But yeah, it was something that would really stick with me forever. But I thought we didn't apply ourselves properly in these games. When we were there, it was eye-opening, but for me, I was trying to feel my way through these games, but I couldn't because we weren't the level of the other players, of the other teams. We were never there. We were never near these teams. We were too far away from these teams because these teams have so much experience and so much quality in the teams, and we were not at the level of these teams. We need to get up to the level of the other teams. We are too far away as a football nation.
I believe, Eric, that it was around 1997 that you would have started the stint in Ireland. You were there for probably over 10 years. How did that come about? That
moved to Ireland. 1996.
1996,
okay.
1996
to be exact. Yeah. How did that come about? It started all with Lalu. You know, Lalu had made an impact in England. And after that, Kevin had brought Lalu over to England, and he was trained by Donna Raven, my first coach in Ireland. And then he, after Lalu left, and he went to Torquay and everything, and Torquay, and then to Bristol. I left to Bristol. Lalu went to Rangers or whatever it is, Queen's Park Rangers. Yeah,
Queen's Park.
Donna Raven left. Torquay, and he came back to Ireland, where he got the job at Galway United. And then after that, he contacted Kevin and asked him if he had any more players over there. So Kevin had told him, yeah, he was bringing a few players to Europe. We were supposed to come to Germany as well. We were supposed to go to Portugal as well. But we ended up in Ireland because when we got there, I said, look, this is a stepping stone for me, you know. See where it leads me today from here. So I decided, okay, let's stay here. It was a good offer. We got good offers. Me and Ryan, we were there together, Ryan Lucas at first. And then came, after that, Luther and Watson. Then there was Noel O'Reilly and a few other more that came over the trail, but they didn't get through as we did. Yeah, like I said, Ireland's a... People may say Ireland is not a football country, but people may say Ireland is a cricket country. People may say this and that. But to be a footballer, professional footballer in Ireland, you have to dig very deep in your soul to achieve what you want to achieve, because Ireland is very cold, it's very wet, it's very hard. You cannot come here and think that because you are a talented player in Barbados or wherever you come from, that you're going to make it. You got to apply yourself. Really apply yourself if you want to get something when you go to Ireland, because it's not going to come to you on a plate full of food or something like that. You need to work very hard to get it.
You moved to Ireland. You played for one or two teams down there.
Yeah.
Galway, I think that would have been the first club you went to.
Hello?
Is still with us? Still hearing us?
Hello?
Okay, I think we're having a bit of a problem with the link with Eric Levine. Let's try it again. Hi, Eric, you still with us?
He's back there with you now, Paul. Try one more time for Eric.
Okay, let's try it again. Eric, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm still there.
Okay.
I'm not going.
Right, I was
here.
Going quickly on to, you would have played for, I think it was Galway. I think you have a little stint with Longford also.
Yeah, and a long time with Longford. I was at Galway for 4.5 years.
You were the first player to score 4 goals in the top division, the League of Ireland. The four goals in the top division.
Yeah, I still hold that record, me and one more boy. We still hold that record together. And it's not broken yet. Nobody has broken it yet. I think up to this date, which is still great. But, you know, like I said, it's a hard place to go.
Okay, as you become quickly to the close to the end of our chat this evening, looking back on your career, you know, how would you assess it? Any regrets you've had?
No, I have not had a regret of my career as a professional footballer. I played 6 times in Europa League or UEFA Cup. I played 4 times in 4 cup finals, winning 3 out of them 4 cup finals. 3 gold medals out of 4 is not bad. And yeah, in the UEFA Cup, 1 time, best player in the UEFA Cup, won the matches. I have no regrets whatsoever. I really enjoyed my professional career.
Fantastic. Do you get a chance to get back home?
Not so often, because I'm coaching here in Germany as well. I'm coaching a team here as well in Germany.
Okay.
And we just won the league. And looking forward to next season when it starts again soon, I think. And then looking forward to getting promoted again to the next level.
So you're still very much involved in the sport?
All the time. I just done my UEFA A license. Probably next year I start my pro license. Not too sure. I decide later on if I'm going to take a break or go on again to the next level. It's a lot of work, so it takes a bit of time as well.
Well, Eric, I want to thank you very much for your, first of all, your contribution to Barbados football, and happy to hear that you're still involved in the sport, and I want to wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on here and to be speaking with you, and let the people in Barbados know I'm still around, and that, I'm thankful that I was there. I was thankful that I was playing for Barbados in Barbados, and for all the guys that had me along the way, like Trevor, Ayer, Sealy, and Peter Tattle, and all the rest. I'm thankful to them. And also Randy Harris, a good friend of mine too, you know. We don't chat often, but I know he was one of the people that always stood behind me. Although chicken tin when things were rough, he was one of the people, you know, that always was pushing for me. So, I'm thankful for that.
Eric Levine, thank you very much for joining us on Penalty Spot. And once again, all the best to you in the future and your family. So that was the voice of former Barbados player Eric Levine, as he said, now residing in Germany and doing some coaching there. Certainly hope that at some point we can have him back home to probably put some of that expertise he has into our local football. Really great hearing from him. This is the Penalty Spot.
Good evening and welcome back to the program, of course. A very good evening and welcome back to the program as we continue today's edition of Penalty Spot in association with the BFA. Also on tonight's program, we're about to have a word with BFA President Randy Harris. Haven't spoken to Randy. Good evening to
Hello?
You, Randy. Hi, Randy. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, Randy. Good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening. How are you doing?
I am good as well. Well, this is week number, it's too many. Without football, I would ask you the question I'm asked every single week. Any word as yet on the resumption of the BFA's competitions?
No, we're still at the same place. Obviously, we have to wait on the authorities to give us the okay to get busy. And even then, we have to ensure that we have the right protocols for our players and officials.
I guess on the plus side, while we wait for the go-ahead and the possible resumption, we have the opportunity to learn and take some spot from what has been happening in Europe and England and see how they have been dealing with a possible resumption. We don't have that sort of level of funding, but some lessons still to be learned.
Yes, obviously we have been looking at how they organize their matches, but we've found that not only that the kind of resources needed may be out of our reach, but we couldn't really start anything without having trained medical people at the venue, and that is another cost.
I know everything is very much still fluid, very up in the air. As you said, we can't do anything until we have the go-ahead from authorities. Has the BFA at this stage identified a cutoff point, a date, to say, okay, if we don't have a resumption by this point, you'll be forced to pull the plug on the 2020 season?
Right. We have looked at October, the end of October, if we aren't really clear. And football cannot be organized in a way that will demand the safety of the participants. We will have to cancel 2020 season.
Would this also apply to a possible out-of-season competition? We had the Capelli last year, finishing in early December. If we pull the glove on the Premier League season, is that it for football, well-organized BFA football for the season? Or would it be a case of trying to have some sort of preseason for the 2021 campaign?
Well, we are looking at some kind of competition once we're allowed to do it. But the Capelli tournament, we in the BFA have decided that it will be a biannual tournament, and there wouldn't have been a Capelli tournament this year anyway. And I, based on how we started the schedule for the season, we wouldn't have been able to have one anyway, because this year we would have to concentrate a lot on preparation for our senior national team, men's, and under 17 boys tournament. This is CONCACAF people's tournament, and we would have had to use a lot of time trying to see if we can qualify further down the line.
Of course, we're hoping the players, especially the players in the national setup and in the future Tridents program, are doing their best to maintain their fitness at home. Of course, we can't have national training, but you would want the players, when we get the okay, to come back with a reasonable level of fitness. Injuries should be all sorted. They would have had an extended period of rest, and it could be the one positive coming out of this enforced suspension.
Well, I know that the national coach and the technical director set programs for the players in the national teams. We have to hope that they're following the regime, but it looks like most of them, and I haven't been in contact with all of them, have been following the routine and are trying to keep their bodies in certain form. The thing is that even when this COVID-19 is cleared, we still have CONCACAF and FIFA to decide how it will affect their format for qualification. And that is an issue that we have to be ready with, because we don't want them coming up on us and telling us they've scheduled matches for within a 2-week period or a 3-week period.
Randy, you're also the president of the Caribbean Football Union and a FIFA CONCACAF vice president, beg your pardon. Has there been any indication as yet of the possible ramification the pandemic will have for football moving forward in Barbados, in terms of when we have the resumption, will there be new protocols to be put in place that will become new standards in terms of the possible health care and the medics and whatnot?
Well, all of us in this region, CONCACAF, which includes the CFU, we are all in the same boat. And of course, going forward, it is not going to be the same. But we have to get together and decide what's best for all of us. But it is obvious now, from looking on, that I don't think that things will be as normal as how we knew them before.
As you continue, perhaps, Randy, to spend a little time with the CFU scene, recent weeks and months dominated by the controversy that has enveloped Trinidad's football. Last thing I saw was that the former executive, the coaches, and as the members of the TTFA staff were petitioning the Prime Minister to perhaps provide some relief in terms of the salaries that they are owed and whatnot. The Minister of Sport said that the government's role is not to get involved in such a dispute. What's the latest as far as the CFU and the Trinidad Impasse and the Normalization Committee?
Well, the statement made by the TNT government sports minister is the stance that is usually taken. We play under the auspices of FIFA. Not only we play under the auspices of FIFA, but most of us, if not for FIFA's assistance, would not be able to have programs, facilities, etc., as we know them. That apart, the biggest situation is that I don't believe that some of the people in Trinidad who are fighting against FIFA really understand the tenets of football. I'm not an attorney by any means, but they have agreed to play under certain regulations. And now that FIFA has to enforce whatever laws that they can, TNT FA's elected body is saying, is trying to move the goalposts. But they still want FIFA to send them money for their expenses, and that is really not going to happen.
Have a WhatsApp coming in for you, Randy. Of course, we're taking your messages as well. You can send your emails to 18sports246@gmail.com, 18sports246@gmail.com. Give us a call, 4341790, or you can WhatsApp Paul and I personally, those of you who would have those numbers. And this person says, good night, Randy. I'm looking forward to the resumption of local football and the next edition of Super Sunday. I can tell you, Randy, I'm looking forward to Super Sunday as well. It's been quite a while since we've had some live action.
Well, I say to myself, I know all these things happen for a reason. I mean, they're things that we can't foresee. But I am saying that just as it seemed that we were getting back good support for football, the COVID-19 came in. It's unfortunate, but we have some time now on our hands to look at the football and come up with some ways of encouraging not only spectator support, but more importantly, a way that our players can benefit in a pretty significant way. We have some ideas. We'll discuss it with the leaders of the clubs first and see what they think about it. But I believe that football can move in a more positive direction as when we are allowed really to have competition again.
Okay, thank you very much, Randy. That's the voice of our DFA President Randy Harris. He's also the president of the Caribbean Football Union and a vice president of CONCACAF, a football giant. Paul Mears, a big one, as they say, as we continue tonight's edition of the Penalty Spot, of course, in association with the BFA. Coming up next, Club Corner, as we take a look at the Beverly Hills Football Club and have a word from a man I've not heard for quite a while, Ali Rochester. This is the Penalty Spot.
And welcome back to Penalty Spot. We head into our club corner. We've been looking at some really big clubs in Barbados over the past few weeks. And this evening, no exception, we're going to travel to Beverly Hills. And we're going to welcome to Penalty Spot, Ali Rochester. Good evening to you, Ali.
Good evening, my brother.
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm just here trying and waiting for things to happen. And as soon as they get everything organized, we'll be rearing and ready to go.
You're missing the football like most of the fans?
Well, most of the fans understand the position. But yes, I do miss the football because all I know is we're busy getting my men organized.
Okay, let's talk Beverly Hills. And when we talk Beverly Hills, we can't separate Beverly Hills from the name of Ali Rochester. First of all, Ali, how long have you been associated with this club?
Well, I can tell you now about 55 years or so I've been.
Repeat that for me.
About 55 years now.
55 years. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a club record.
Yeah, man, it is. It is because I love my area. I love my club. And I love the men that from the audience, and I would just do everything in my power to keep Beverly Hills playing football in Barbados.
Now, let's take you back to the very start. How did you get involved in the club, the early days of the club?
In the early days, I saw some very good players playing for Beverly Hills, and I used this to come up because Beverly Hills really was right in front of my house. And I used to look through the window and see the older guys out there playing football. And I used to watch them and I enjoy watching the fellas play. And I wanted to be a player also. So I went and played among the older fellas. And this
around what year that was, Ali, not crossing you. Around what year was that?
That was all the way down in 1960, they started the club in 1957, right? They started playing, organized as a club in 1957, and then they started playing the football as a club because they first started to play the soft shoot, the friendly football first before they entered into Division Four. Mm-hmm. And they entered into the Division Four somewhere along 1960 or so. And they won the cup on two occasions down there. They won the 4th Division Cup and they won the Division Two Cup because they were promoted. They got promoted because they had a vacancy in the Division Three when they were playing Division Three, and they got promoted to Division Two. So all of those things happened all the way down in 1968.
And that would have been the year you would have won the Division One, 68?
Yeah, we won the Division One in 68. We had some very good players at that
time. Griffith was in that squad?
Oh, yes, and Tyrone Ford and Errol Wallop. Edward Roller, Lester Welch, Massey, Glenn Johnson, a very good player. You know, deceased. Malcolm Eiffel, I don't know if you remember Malcolm Eiffel.
Yes, very much so.
Trevor Linton, he was also in that team. And a little small guy that used to score all the goals would be called Frank Revere. It was a very good team, and I can remember going to Kensington as the ball boy, because that's the only way that I would be able to get in. And I went on there as the ball boy, and these fellas could really play. And we used to come up against teams like Charlton, Blackford. We had Everton down there at the time. Wales, all those teams I watched Beverly Hills come up against, and these fellas really played well. They had some very good opportunities. Gas Clark and Paul Hines. Paul Hines used to play for Blackford at that time.
Okay.
And Gas Clark was playing for Wales at the time.
And Keith would have been switching between Beverly Hills and Wales?
Well, Keith only went to Wales after there was a little thing in the club and he decided to leave and went to Wales. But he eventually came back to Beverly Hills. And he came back to Beverly Hills anyway in 1977, and we won with Keith Griffith again in 1977. And it was a different set of men now that emerged because of the Earlings tournament.
Right.
I never allow Beverly Hills to play football, and then it had a nursery for the men. I took up that position of running the outer season tournament about 3 years after it started in 1976. And in 1979, when they refused to run it, I took it up from there, and I decided that I would run it. And out of the All-Ins tournament, we had a lot of very good players. And out of the early tournament in 1977, we won the Division One again, right? And
I think 2 years later, you won the Knockout Cup, 79.
Yeah, we won the knockout. We also won the knockout and the league in the same year.
Wonderful.
And we had people like Keith Griffith in there again.
He would have been player coach at that point.
That's right. And we had Jeffrey Hackett and Shirley and Bernard Clark. They were two very good players in the day, boys. My brother, he was also in there. And Charles Williams, you can remember Charles Williams played goalkeeper for Barbados.
Yes.
Playing for Beverly Hills and goalkeeping so well. He was called up to the national team, and we did pretty well. We played division. At that time it was Division One, though it wasn't Premier League.
Right.
And we stood up there for about 4 years, and then all of a sudden we went back down to Division Two.
What would you say now, Ali, is the status of the club right now?
I think that we have so many good players scattered all over Barbados. And it does hurt me to know that these fellas would not even come back and lend a hand so that we could get from Division Two back into Premier League. And these fellas, you know, I mean, when we look into people's teams, and we could see people like Adrian Hines and Sharon Beasley, Zico Hurley. You know, Vince Stanford, Vince Galassi Stanford.
Yes.
When you look around in these Premier League teams, and you see these great players, Andre Gibson there for the team in the Ivy League. You know, we got a lot of very good players scattered all over the Premier League, and if some of them should leave and come back now, Terry Holder, the goalkeeper, he also is in the Premier League. So we got some very good players. And if they should come back to Beverly Hills at some point in time, I think that our club would think. But right now we have some players, and young players, you know, because of me running the club, I always looking to recruit players. And the Earlings has produced its own players. We don't have to go outside of the Earlings really to get players. There's always a group of players coming through. That is why we are so successful. And we were so successful with the outer season tournament because out of the outer season tournament, we saw these youngsters. And I believe that outer season is the nursery. With the plenty outer season tournaments throughout Barbados, it was the nursery for football in Barbados. And football in Barbados took a big leap when they had all these outer season tournaments because the youngsters, we see the youngsters, but now with the destruction of the outer season tournament, we can't find the players because the players are not coming forward, and they would rather stand on the block now and do a lot of things that they shouldn't be out there doing. If they had the outer season tournament, then they would be held on the block, but the whole argument for the whole day would be our fellow player yesterday, last night. And
that's
the
right.
Foolishness that we do from this weekend, though. And it would be an argument right to tell the football ready to start again the next evening, because when you're out of the season, it is a continuous thing, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right there down the road. So I think that Beverly Hills right now could be back, but I think that if the outer season tournament start again, because, you know, they were stopped. If the outer season tournament start back again, I believe that we will see a lot more players coming forward and, you know, making the team, giving the team a lot of strength so that we could go forward.
You've seen many, many players over the years, Ali.
Yeah.
In your book, who would you say are some of the most outstanding players you've seen on the football field in Barbados?
Well, as I told you, I am way back. I saw Gias, I saw Paul Hines, I saw Reggie Haynes, I saw some Lloyd Steele, a goalkeeper, very good goalkeeper for Carlton. I saw Davy Clark, very good midfielder. The next one is his brother, can't remember what is his name now, but he used to play for Wales. He used to score a lot of goals for Wales, man. But I can't remember his name right now. But he and coming through from the other teams, you know, I saw people like I had a boy there so from Gore Hill. I just can't remember the names of these players right now. But as I tell you, in the days that gone by, I saw better players in those days than as we are producing them now. The players back then was better than the players that we got now.
Why would you think that is so? Why do you think that is so?
Because of the standard.
I mean, overall standard of football.
The standard of football back then was so competitive. I mean, you go at a game, say, Wales coming up against Everton at Kensington Oval, and you, before the 4 o'clock, the place actually full, and you down there, you can see Reggie Haynes on one side, and you can see Gias Clark and all the rest of the players on that team. And when you see these fellas start to play football, as a matter of fact, you know, we use this to beat teams that come down from England. They have some teams that use the Premier League teams that come down in the summer and play the top teams in Barbados, the ones that won the Division One. And we use Air France and all them people. The teams that we used to pick to play those teams, used to either beat them or give them a lot of trouble before we could beat that. And you don't really get that there happening now with the teams that we got playing now in football. You bring a team down here, they surely run a lot of rings around the players that we got now.
Okay. Well, Ali, I want to thank you very much for sharing those wonderful memories with us this evening as we looked at Beverly Hills in the club corner. And you've been fighting this fight now for over 50 years. How long you can continue?
Well, you see, I am training some youngsters to take over from me now. Dale Thompson and Charlie Sturridge, Ed Lovell. These fellas will take over sooner rather than later. But once I am alive, Beverly Hills will be alive also. Because, you see, in Beverly Hills, the players do not pay subs. The players do not pay anything. In Beverly Hills, you decide you can play, we make sure that we provide everything for you down here in the Orleans, and you becomes like a professional.
Okay.
All you got to do is turn up your books and play some football. Because we will pay all the bills to you. Because if we wait on the youngsters of today to pay registration fees, and membership and all that sort of thing. You ain't getting a football injury.
Ali, thank you very much again for joining us. It's been wonderful sharing those memories, as I said, with you. And I want to wish you all the best as you continue to fight the good fight for the footballers in the Orleans area.
Okay, thank you very much, my brother.
That's the voice of Ali Rochester. We've been trying to get a comment, Curtis, from your good friend Ron Maycock. Not sure if you'll get him in maybe during the next segment, the International Roundup, as you come back to us. But a special thanks again to Ali Rochester. And we've been looking at the Beverly Hills Club in our Club Corner this evening.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to tonight's program of A Penalty Spot Compliment, the BSA. I really enjoyed that section with Ali Rochester as he took us back and then brought us forward, the Beverly Hills Club. If you can remember the Orleans out-of-season football competition where that was on, football began and ended right there. And you simply had the best of the best involved in that competition in the Orleans. As we make our final spot tonight, well, possibly another one with Ron Maycock, but at this point in time, we've been joined by the BFA's Youth Committee Chairman, Wales Coach Ronaldo Peebles. Good evening to you, Peebles.
Hey, good evening, Curtis. Good evening to Paul and the whole team inside.
Yes, indeed. And before we look at what has been going on internationally, lots of stuff happening over the past few weeks. I've been following your social media. I've been seeing some sneaks and some peeks at what has been going on behind the scenes. Anything you care to share with us? I think we may have lost Ronaldo. He's still with us?
Yes. You hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you. You're breaking up a bit there.
Yeah, you can hear me right now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Yeah. As I was saying, I always used to do a bit of individual training on my own, and then I had the opportunity to work with some of the players who wanted to keep themselves in shape, who were coming back from injury and so on. And I've had the opportunity to work with one of my players who is based overseas, Axel Funk. He's based in Florida, in Georgia, at Darlington Academy. He's now coming back from an ACL injury, so we've used this opportunity, especially since things have, for lack of a better word, reopened, as the island has reopened slightly, to get some work into test his recovery to identify where he's at, because he has to go right back into preseason training in August. We're still staying within obeying protocols by the government and the health officials. So no violations here. So no yellow cards warranted.
What's the latest now from the Weymouth Bale setup? As you would have heard from BFA President Randy Harris, no resumption as yet. Still waiting on the final space. What have you been doing to keep the guys motivated and busy?
For the most part, conversation, checking in, see how some of the players are doing. Because I'm relatively I'm new. Players, they help, but off the pitch because often lends to one pitch. Some of the players have opportunity to think of the individual sessions and keep themselves sharp. But I have the privilege of getting to meet here with Mr. Harris, the President Harris, with the Premier League clubs on Monday. Not Monday, I'm sorry, it was Friday. Yeah, Friday, where he gave that bit of information. I think it was a brilliant idea, but that's it to communicate with the clubs to keep us abreast of what's going on in the FA, what things are likely to happen going on to the rest of the year or to the end of the year. But as you would remember,
earlier when I had an interview with Mark Goodwin's boys, I did say it may be best call to call the pull stumps at this time in the season. Mr. Harris, he didn't say that because I imagine he's somewhat optimistic of how things may unfold. And I'm going to jump on his bandwagon of optimism. I hope so as well. But we know how things are so far. We've only had the Bundesliga. We started Spain and the Nets in line and then Italy. But as you know, they have resources, both human and otherwise, to restart or basically resume their season.
Okay, you mentioned the Bundesliga. Let's dive right in now to the international scene. Last three games completed yesterday. Werder Bremen beat Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg beat Werder Bremen 1-0. Schalke and FC Berlin played to a 1-0 draw. Schalke now equaling their record for the most games without a win. I believe it's now into double digits. And Augsburg and Cologne played out a 1-0 draw. What that all means in terms of the Bundesliga is that Bayern Munich continue to lead, looking pretty unassailable at this stage at 70 points from their 30 games. Borussia Dortmund are second still, 63 points from their 30 games. Leipzig third, 59 points from their 30 games. And those are the top three. And one of the brightest prospects in Germany now, Ronaldo being highly, highly linked to Chelsea. It is said that he has agreed personal terms. But as you know, until that contract is signed, anything can still happen. But at this stage, it looks like Chelsea has pulled off quite a bit.
You must be smiling.
Broadly.
You must be smiling because here you have a player who averages at least 19 goals a season. We're talking here about Timo Werner, who is also a feature within the German national team. I think that it's actually a brilliant move, brilliant work by the hierarchy at Chelsea. I'm sure right now part is absolutely head over heels because here he has, Giroud is about to be on a contract. You have Willian and Pedro. You have a player coming in who's already seasoned at 24 years old. And as I said, his record, his average is at least 19 goals a season. And I think what works for Chelsea with regard to the signing of Werner, that he's very versatile. Yeah, for a big guy, he can play as a central figure. And he can also play as a wide forward, meaning that it allows for a bit of flexibility with the system in which Lampard uses. Maybe he may go with one center forward in Abraham. Maybe he used two and pair Abraham with Werner. But I think that it's a brilliant bit of business thus far. I'm sure they'll be pushing to get it over the finish line. As you know, initially Liverpool were the ones completely flirting with signing. And I think that into perspective where he's looking at it from a business perspective, not knowing who is leaving, therefore obviously not knowing what revenue is coming in. So to go and slash $60 million on a player who potentially would be a fourth choice when you look at who Liverpool has across the front in Salah, Firmino, and Mane, to slash $60 million and then looking at wages and so on, it may business sense. I also think from a development perspective, if you're going to retain those three players I just mentioned, still having Origi, I think that to have a fourth string player, a player who will be ranked number four within your pecking order of forwards, it might be not so much good business for Liverpool.
Indeed. We also saw during the week Diego Costa escape one-year prison sentence. This is the normal behavior in Spain. They always go after you for image rights and taxes. He's been hit with a fine just short of €500,000, but he has deepish pockets. He'll be okay. In terms of England, they're still stepping up for the resumption in about 10 days' time. Liverpool, as we know, needs 6 points to be confirmed as the Premier League champions. That's two wins, the same amount of wins which Bayern Munich now require as well to clinch the Bundesliga title. Much closer in Spain, however, and that Real Madrid-Barcelona battle goes on eternally. Both players looking for reinforcements, PV, but both teams also hamstrung by some high, high wages and some high demands from players who would want to come. Neymar still flirting and says he wants to come home. As usual, Real Madrid is linked with everyone who's expensive. And I'm not sure how that one's going to pan out.
Well, I think in addition to the Diego Costa news over the last week, maybe 7 to 10 years, we've also heard of the quad injury to Lionel Messi and the potential doubts that surround his return at La Liga. You know how much they need him, especially going into this last lap with Real Madrid so close. Luckily for them, there has been the return of Luis Suarez to training. However, you know, it may take a couple of games to get firing. So it will be interesting to see what the Barcelona camp will be like. I guess the hype around Braffet, who they signed during the season, the low profile signing that they signed during the season, I guess that hype has died down, but maybe he might be the savior that Barcelona may need to clinch another La Liga. But I think the issue around Messi is definitely a major concern for not just the Barcelona camp within Spain, but the big Barcelona support crew that you have here in Barbados as well. I think that's going to be a key battle going on to the end. Real Madrid, as you know, Curtis, they will always be the Galacticos. You know, as you said, they always align themselves with big players.
Yes.
So far, you're hearing Mbappe. You're even hearing
Pogba.
Yeah. Barcelona's target, Lautaro Martinez.
Yes.
I mean, it's endless. Once you're performing at the time, Real Madrid is interested. One time they were interested in Kane, but I'm sure on what he was for Kane recently, especially his return, he left us on a couple pounds for him.
Yeah, not unusual for him, but
the same salad bar.
Yeah. What is going to be interesting, though, is that the resumption of football across Europe has basically put it into a shootout. 9-10 mm-hmm. games, and that is it. It is right for players to get injured. We don't know what is going to happen in terms of the resumption of the start of the 2021 season, the 2020-2021 season. We also have the prospect of Champions League for the teams at the top, Europa. Next year, also a Euro 21 year. Remember that tournament was deferred. And all of this football also going on in the backdrop with the current unrest. And in terms of what has been going on in the streets, the protests and footballers being linked to all of that, Raheem Sterling, as per usual, leading the charge in England and saying enough is enough and certain things must change.
And since we're discussing Curtis, before we go, I just want to say congratulations to Budapest Hanzin, the team that Thierry Gale plays for. They qualified for Europa next year. So if all goes well, fingers crossed, we will have our first local player playing in Europe, playing in the European League. So his qualification really gets there. They won the Hungarian
So I echo those sentiments and also say congratulations to his dad, Dwayne Gill. Thank you very much, Ronaldo PB Jokes. And
thank you.
A shout out to you as well from Kevin Branch of the Shins and Boots team. Good evening to you, Kevin. Of course, we're told BFM President Randy Harris is the next guest on the next edition of the Shins and Boots show this coming Sunday. You can look for that one online. This has been the Hammer Spot. You can join us next week, same time, same station, as we take a look at the world of local, regional, and international football, all in association with the BFA.